The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
This blood brothering between you, Prince Midalis, and you, Chieftain Bruinhelda, will be the first in over a decade. You are not to harm the Shaggoth in no way, not even at the cost of your own life. Not that you could bring harm to the great beast anyway. Not even if you brought fine weapons in there with you. This is a test of your courage, not your warrior skills, and the test of your trust in each other. If either of you fails, then you both will surely die, and horribly. Are you prepared to begin?
What are you about, elf? Are you going to tell me or not?
You take care, Bradwarden. On the South Road, I heard rumors of the Rosy Plague.
Oh, by the demons, you say?
I know not if there's any truth to those words. More likely, they were the utterances of a gossiping fool and nothing more. But I can ill afford to take the chance, any chance, of bringing the plague back to my people. Know that if the land becomes ill with plague, the Tuelalfar will secure our borders, and none will leave for many years. Farewell.
It is the plague! It is confirmed, my king! The Rosy Plague! What are we to do?
What can we do? Lock our doors fast and tight.
Oh, but where are you then? You've not been out of your walls in days! In weeks! Are you just to sit in there and let us all die then? Are you just to stand on your walls and shoot us dead if we come too close? And you're calling yourself the folk of God? But you're just a pack of scared dogs, you're!
Join with us before all the world is fallen into darkness. Help us put the church aright and thus end the misery of the plague.
You believe the plague to be a punishment from God?
On those who have forsaken the truth.
Absurd.
Obvious. I see it, and they see it. We know the truth, and we know the source, and no edicts from Father Abbot Agrangair will sway us from that path.
You risk the wrath of Father Abbot Agrangair and all the masters of Saint Mirabel.
And you, Brother Glendonhawk, risk the wrath of Marcalo de Unaro. Which of us, then, do you believe in the worst situation?
You have gone mad.
As much has been said of many prophets. If you try to stop us, you may prove victorious, but I warn you that I will come for your throat first and foremost.
Experience the latest chapter of the Demon Wars saga in graphic audio. Don't miss Mortalis Part 2, available now.
Graphic audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Vada's War by Elizabeth Moon. Book 3, Engaging the Enemy, Part 1. Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Lily Beacon, Christopher Sheeran, Colleen Delaney, Ken Jackson, Mort Shelby, Jeff Baker, Stephen Carpenter, Elizabeth Jernigan, David Coyne, Christopher Graybill, Richard Rowan, Tim Getman, Barbara Pinellini, Terrence Aselford, Michael Glenn, Andy Clements, Eric Messner, Yasmin Twazan, Dylan Lynch, Sherry Simpson, James Lewis, Thomas Penny, Laura Quinn Anderson, Katie Foster, Danny Gavigan, Joe Brack, James Konacek, Johan Detweiler, and Nathaniel Perry.
In the afternoon sky, the sound of the approaching aircraft rose above the sea breeze, a steady drone. Nothing to see. No, there it was. Small to make that much noise. And then the sudden flood of data from the implant. Not an aircraft, no one aboard. A weapon homing on the airfield's navigational beacon. Visual data blanked, overloaded by heat and light. Auditory data, an inchoate mass of noise, swiftly parsed into channels again, stored, analyzed. Primary explosion, structural damage. Secondary explosion, quick flicker of building plans, primary visual restored.
No!
Kai Vada jerked awake, heart pounding. She wasn't there, she was here, in the dark captain's cabin of Fair Colleen. Darkness pricked with the steady green telltales of major ship functions. All she could hear, beyond her own pulse beating in her ears, were the normal sounds of a ship in FTL flight. No explosions, no fires, no crashing bricks or shattering glass, no reverberative boom echoing off the hills minutes later.
Bed light!
A soft glow rose behind her, illuminating tangled sheets and her shaking hands. She glared at her hands, willing them to stop. The chronometer informed her that it was mid-third shift. She had been asleep 2 hours and 14 minutes this time. She went into the bathroom and looked into the mirror. She looked every bit as bad as she felt. A shower might help. She had showered already. She had taken shower after shower, just as she had worked out hour after hour in the ship's gym, hoping to exhaust or relax herself into a full night's sleep.
I'm the captain. I have to get over this.
This time, she dialed the shower cold. Thoroughly chilled and awake for the moment, she dressed quickly and headed out into the ship. She could always call it a mid-shift inspection. Her eyes burned. Her stomach cramped, and she headed first for the galley.
Maybe hot soup.
In the galley, Rafe was ripping open one of the ration packs.
Our dutiful captain. Mid-shift rounds again? Don't you trust us?
It's not that I don't trust the crew. I'm not sure of this ship.
As I'm sure you recall, I'm on third shift duty right now, and this is my mid-shift meal. You want something?
Kai wanted sleep. Real sleep, uninterrupted by dreams or visions or whatever.
The first snack you pick up.
Rafe reached into the cabinet without looking and pulled something out.
Traditional wasky custard. The picture is an odd shade of yellow. Sure that's what you want?
I'll try it.
Rafe had put his own meal in the oven. Now he handed Kai a small sealed container and a spoon. She glanced at the garish label. It did look unappetizing. Inside the seal was what looked like a plain egg custard. Kai dug the spoon into it. It should be soothing. Rafe sat across from her at the table.
Excuse my mentioning it to the captain, but you look like someone slugged you in both eyes about 10 minutes ago. I promise to perform all my duties impeccably if you'll go back to bed and look human in the morning.
Kai started to say something about duty, but she couldn't get the words out.
I can't sleep.
Ah. Reliving the fight? It must have been bad.
That attempt at pop psych therapy almost made Kai laugh. Almost.
No. I had my post-manslaughter nightmare the second night. This is something else.
You could tell me.
When Kai didn't respond, Rafe sat up.
With the matter of the internal ansibles, you have enough on me that I wouldn't dare reveal any secrets of yours.
Maybe it was safe to talk to him. He had been ready to commit suicide rather than let outsiders know he had unknown technology, a personal instantaneous communicator, implanted in his head. Kai tented her hands above the custard, which was not as soothing as she'd hoped. Something in the texture almost sickened her.
It's not... It's... I'm not sure what it is. I think, somehow, I'm seeing what happened back home.
What? The attack?
Yes. I know it's impossible. I don't even know if Dad's implant recorded any of it. And I haven't tried to access those dates anyway. But I keep dreaming it, or something.
A high-level implant could record it all. If your father wanted a record, something for a court. Are you sure it's not bleeding over? I mean, if he put an urgent-to-transmit command on it...
It couldn't override my priorities, could it? Everything's user-defined.
True, but this implant's had two users. It may not know you aren't your father.
That's...
Ridiculous, she had been going to say, but maybe it wasn't. She'd had the implant inserted in an emergency, with no time then for adjustment of implant and brain. She'd gone directly into combat, and then the direct connection to Rafe's implant had made changes in hers. Changes that essentially reconfigured it into some kind of cranial Ansible. That might have damaged or changed control functions. And she'd never had someone else's implant before. Why, she wondered now, hadn't Aunt Grace downloaded the data into a new one? Unless it couldn't be done.
I hadn't thought of that. What do you know about transferred implants?
Not much. I know it's possible to use one. I don't know how much residual control might be involved. That one was your father's command implant, right? I'd expect it to have special features.
It probably does. It certainly does now, after linking with yours. I suppose I'd better look into that.
Kai looked at the cup of custard and pushed it away. Rafe pulled his own meal pack from the microwave.
If you don't want to go insane from lack of sleep and nightmares, that would be a yes. Real food wouldn't hurt either. How about some noodles and chicken? I can make myself another.
It did smell good. Kai nodded. Rafe pushed the tray across to her, picked up her container of uneaten custard and sniffed at it, then wrinkled his nose and dropped it in the recycler. He pulled out another meal pack and put that in the microwave before sitting down again. Kai took a bite of noodle and sauce. It went down easily.
See if the implant has a sleep cycle enabler. They don't put those in kids' implants, but the high-end adult ones often do, along with a timer. It should be in the personal adjustment menu somewhere.
Kai queried her implant and found it. Sleep enhancement mode. Maximum duration, 8 hours. Monitored and regulated brainwave activity and damped sensory input. Users were instructed not to use this function more than 5 sleep cycles in a row without medical advice. An urgent tag came up. Authorized user request. Review sealed files. Kai scrolled mentally to check the priorities of sleep enhancement versus urgent message, dropped the priority of the message to allow sleep enhancement to override it, and set a condition for waking. Then she finished her noodles and chicken.
I'm going back to bed. Till first shift, I may be late.
Initiating sleep enhancement mode was like walking off a cliff into oblivion. Kai woke, feeling rested for the first time since before she'd put the implant in. Languid, comfortable. After a shower and change, she went up to the bridge. Lee looked up as she entered.
Good rest, Captain?
Very good. But I'm going to need to spend a lot of time today exploring data stored in this implant. I suspect it's going to be very intense. So if there's anything you know you need for this shift, tell me now.
Well, we're doing fine. All systems green. This is a lovely ship, despite the way she's been used. Whatever else Osmond was up to, he maintained the ship's systems perfectly.
Call if you need me. I'll be in my cabin.
Kai puttered around briefly, stripping the bed and sending the linens through the fresher cycle, reluctant to face what was coming. When she realized that, she sat down at her desk and activated the secured files. This time she was awake and viewed the audiovisual data as an outsider, not a participant. Her father's emotions did not flood her awareness. She recognized the silhouettes of the two craft before the implant matched them. Still, The violence of the explosions was shocking. Deliberately, Kai slowed the replay, returning again to the same image.
Aircraft with missiles or bombs? Or are they the weapons?
That hardware could be either. They had come in low and fast. The implant did not record, her father had not thought to look for, the telltale evidence that might tell her which they were. Kai put a tagger on the best of the early images and told the implant to find any similar images after the explosions. But apparently her father had not looked for the aircraft again, nor had he tapped into the airfield scan data after that first moment.
Back to the beginning.
The implant didn't tell her what her father was thinking that afternoon, but it held his planned itinerary, a flight from Corley back to the mainland, and his planned schedule, a meeting with senior management at VADA headquarters, the agenda including the quarterly financial reports, dinner with his brother and his brother's wife, the next 2 days a series of meetings with the Slaughter Key Tick Growers Association, the Slaughter Key Agricultural Commission, the Slaughter Key Shipping Advisory Commission, an address to the graduating class of Nandinia School of Business. Kai ignored the link to the text. All routine. He normally spent at least 6 days out of 10 on the mainland. Her mother preferred Corley's gentler climate, except during the main social season. His flight plan had been properly filed well in advance. Anyone could have known when he would be at the little private airfield, and yet no explosion occurred there. Kai noted that oddity and went back to the visual record itself. The local offices exploded. Debris rained from the sky. Another explosion. The visual output darkened. Along the margins, a row of red numbers appeared, giving her father's vital signs.
Is this when he died?
But no. The visual record returned as someone pulled debris off him. She recognized the faces. Old George, their pilot, Gaspard. Someone she had seen around the office. Marin Sanlin, the implant told her. Her father looked toward the house, now a tower of flame and smoke. Even seeing it, Kai could not quite believe it. Surely the comfortable, sprawling house with its tall windows to catch the sea breeze, its cool tile floors, had not really gone so fast, so completely. Some walls still stood as fire raged inside, consuming everything from her past. The long, polished dining room table, the library with its shelves of data cubes and old books, the paintings, the family rooms. The pool, its surface crusted with debris, shards of wood and ash. And then, the horror of her mother's face. Kai terminated the playback, squeezed her eyes shut, and opened them again to the bland blank screen of the desk display. Her mother, beautiful, intelligent, graceful, infuriating to a daughter who had never felt as beautiful, as intelligent, as graceful. She had been annoyed so often, rebellious so often, resistant so often to her mother's advice, and now she could never tell her mother how much she admired and loved the woman who had given her birth. Kai pushed away from the desk. It was real. It had really happened. Her mother was really dead, no mistaking that. And she would have to find a way to cope. But not right this moment. Instead, she headed for the ship's gym. Osman had not run a slack ship, and Fair Colleen had a superb facility for keeping a crew of pirates battle-ready, from the usual run of exercise machines to an onboard firing range. She would work some of this off and counter the effect of all those premium-grade rations at the same time. Gordon Martin was there before her. She paused a moment, watching him do a gymnastics sequence, rolls and flips. He came upright, facing the hatch, and nodded to her.
Morning, Captain.
Do you feel like sparring with me?
Well, of course, Captain, but... You seem upset.
Kai didn't want to explain. She just wanted to hit something. Somebody.
Exercise will help.
Well, you need to stretch first.
Kai nodded and went through preliminary stretches as fast as she thought she could get away with. Then they squared off on the gymnastics mats. Kai forced herself to start slowly with the basics. Gordon matched her. They had trained in the same system, and they had sparred enough before to have a feel for each other's styles. She was sweaty and sore when they quit, but she felt somewhat better for it. Going back to the implant's replay was hard. She wanted to skip ahead, but she knew she must not. Her mother's face, distorted by bruises, smeared with wet ash, all too obviously dead, was relieved only by the life signs readouts along the edge of the visual field. Her father had looked at her mother a long time before someone took her body away, as his own condition worsened. Blood pressure dropping, core temperature, arterial oxygen, the implant cut functions not in use, finally managing only the recording she now watched and heard. She saw her Aunt Grace through her father's eyes, saw the fierce old woman not as the dotty, fussy prima donna she'd always seemed. Aunt Grace, in that hour, could have been any battlefield commander in a crisis. Any good one. The implant shut down while her father was being evacuated, apparently because his condition had deteriorated to the point that the implant could no longer get enough energy to record. There was another urgent file of a family meeting. Kai could not tell where or when. And then the implant shut down again.
Stella said that her father had told Aunt Grace to take his implant. Did Grace access these files, mark them for urgent retrieval? Or did my father do that?
Kai found it easier to ponder that than to think about the images she'd seen. She spent the next hour exploring the implant's capacity, though a short period wasn't enough to access all the organization in detail. A command-level implant held far more, had many more functions, than the one she'd used before she entered the Academy. The new Ansible functions she'd acquired in external link contact with Rafe was enclosed in its own kernel and now carried the ISC logo. She would have to ask Rafe about that, but not at the moment. Ship-related functions were actually much broader than she'd realized. She could even override any of her crew at the controls if she wanted. Though Farrakhalin had not been updated for decades, longer than she'd been alive, the old Vata command datasets deep in the ship's AI had served Osman well, and he had never bothered to delete them. Her implant had already interacted with the AI to bring it up to current Vata standards. In the financial hierarchy, she had access to all her father's knowledge as of the time of the attack. Everything from who held which insurance policies on what to the interstellar potential of the tick trade. Much of that was beyond her. She'd never cared much about the investment end. She'd study it later, or find someone who already understood it. Stella, maybe.
Captain, do you want something to eat?
That was Toby.
Yes, thank you.
Kai stood up stiffly, feeling the exercise she'd done that morning. She should eat. She should sleep. The implant informed her that she'd been working 6 hours. What with the earlier session, exercise, and the second session, she'd skipped one meal already. Fair Colleen's mess had seating for 20. Kai's crew clustered at one end of the long table. The last meal of first shift was the first meal for third shift, so all but Mitt, on bridge watch, were there. Kai sat between Aline and Lee.
I've got the inventory for all the aired-up compartments done. I know what the ship's AI says are in the unaired compartments, but I don't know if it's right.
Do we have anything clearly identifiable as legally owned?
Most of it's unmarked or in ordinary shipping containers, but without bills of lading. Osman didn't keep a record of the ships he stole from, at least not ones I've found yet.
Her father's implant had a section on laws relating to privateering. The privateer took possession of an enemy ship and its contents, and profited by selling off cargo. Open containers were presumed to belong to the ship that carried them, and went to the privateer without question. But sealed containers with bills of lading were supposed to be sequestered and put in the control of a court-appointed assessor at the next port. If they proved to be genuine shipments, then they were shipped on to the original consignee, but with a reward judgment payable to the privateer for stolen goods recovery. Sealed containers without proper bills of lading could be tricky. Technically, they should go through adjudication, but privateers opened sealed but unlabeled containers to convert them to private use. Kai accessed the ship's AI and downloaded the current inventory. Even richer than she'd thought at first. But wealth could not bring the dead to life. Even if she rebuilt the house on Corley, her father and mother would not live in it. Her uncle would never sit at the head of the table in the Vata Enterprises boardroom. She wanted to go back, back before all this, back home, back to the room she knew so well, had known so well, back to a place where every step she took, every voice she heard was familiar. And that would never happen. Kai forced herself back to the present.
Was Osman's version of the inventory accurate when you checked it as far as you could?
Yeah, I was surprised, but I suppose he never expected anyone would have access to this ship's data.
Then I'm going to assume whatever's in the unaired compartments is the same as the list. It's not as if we needed all that.
That was silly, she knew as she said it. They needed much more if she was going to restore just the physical side of Vada, let alone strike back at their attackers. After the meal, she settled into her cabin to consider what next. A year ago, it didn't seem it could really be that long. She had been a happy, ambitious fourth-year cadet in the Slaughter Key Space Force Academy, looking forward to a career as a Space Force officer and a relationship with her fellow cadet, Hal. Since then, she had been kicked out of the academy and dumped by the man she loved. Her subsequent career as a trader in the family business, which she had expected to be boring, had been marked by war, mutiny, attempted assassinations, and finally the capture, from a rogue Vata, of this very ship. Her family and its thriving interstellar business had been almost destroyed. Her own government had sent her a clandestine letter of marque, authorizing her to act as a privateer on its behalf, shortly before refusing to defend or support her family when some enemy attacked. Now she was supposed to save what was left of the family and business, with no allies and too few assets. Too many changes too fast. She focused her attention on the ship again, checking system by system via her cranial implant. All systems nominal, and her senses told her everything felt, smelled, sounded normal as well. She had no excuse to avoid the larger issues.
What am I going to do next? Where will the next attack come from?
Not while they were in FTL flight, at least. She activated the sleep cycle enabler for the second time and woke 8 hours later, this time clear-headed enough to realize that the first sleep hadn't been enough. Now she felt solid out to the edges again, ready to work. She considered another workout in the gym, but decided instead to work on what she least wanted to do, methodically go through Osman's cargo list and assign her best guess at the value, item by item. Some of it was easier than she expected, thanks to her father's implant. Some was nearly impossible. Who could say what someone would pay for prohibited technology most people didn't know existed? Her stomach rumbled, reminding her that she had been up for 2 hours without eating. In the galley, she ignored the enticing premium gold breakfast pack. She felt bloated with all the good food they'd been enjoying, and settled for a protein bar and mug of juice. Someone had left a sticky mug and bowl in the sink. She rinsed them automatically as she considered an array of options. She had two ships now, Gary Tobai, old and slow, and this one, larger, faster, and, most usefully, very well armed. The nucleus of a fleet, albeit a very small fleet. If she was going to command a fleet, she needed a staff. Before that, she needed a full crew of capable personnel on each ship.
Morning, Captain.
Gordon Martin reached past her for a bowl and poured a modest serving of dry flakes into it. He looked, as always, like the veteran soldier he had been before he joined her crew.
I finished the security survey. Osman's bad boys didn't have time to put in many traps. All disarmed.
That's good.
Do you object to my doing some practice on the firing range today? I've checked the reinforcement of the target frames. It's plenty safe for what I'm using.
Kai knew she should get some practice time in, too.
Oh, that's fine. Martin, I wanted to talk to you about command structure now that I have two ships.
Think you can keep this one?
I'm going to keep this one. It's a Vada ship. I'm restoring it to its proper ownership.
Well then, you're talking tables of organization?
One did not say, I guess so, to older veterans, which was Martin's identity, no matter what the papers said. Yes. Simple, but something that can scale up.
Based on Vada tradition, or...
Until we take care of whoever's been attacking Vadas, the old protocols aren't any good. Sure, we need our trade ships back at work hauling cargo and making money, but we can't count on that until we aren't being blown up, shot at, and all the rest. I'm thinking small fleet. I have 2 ships now. I'm reasonably sure that not all Vada ships have been destroyed. As we find them, we can bring them into the plan.
We, meaning you?
We, meaning me, my cousin Stella, and you, Martin, and the rest of the crews.
But with you in command?
Yes. I am the only Vada I know of with the right training.
Yeah, I see that.
Martin ate 2 more spoonfuls, then put the spoon down.
See here, Captain. You have to understand, my background is supply and security. The security duties grew out of supply and inventory control. Now, I've been in a ship in combat, in the Slaughter Key system, but I don't know as much as you need about weapons and tactical things.
What about that organization stuff?
Another spoonful of flakes as he looked thoughtful.
Well, I do understand a lot of that, if you're asking me.
Martin, the thing that's bothered me since I first took command of Gary Tobai back when she was the Glennis Jones is the lack of a clear chain of command on civilian traders. Well, sure, the captain's the boss, but who's next? On the smaller ships, it's a muddle. Muddles in war get people killed.
So what is it you want me to do?
Take over training new crew into capable combat-ready crews. Find me some weapon specialists. If you don't know the weaponry, I'll bet you know personnel and can spot the good ones. Help me get this ship organized and ready.
Yes, ma'am. I can certainly do that. And I can spend this transit with my head in a cube reader, learning the manuals on this ship's weapons, too. I just never had the chance before.
I know I need a second in command, an exec. I wondered if you...
No, ma'am. I'm not the right person for that. I might have made a good senior NCO if I'd kept my nose clean. Might even have made a good sergeant major. But I'm a hands-on, feet-in-the-dirt person. The air gets too thin for me in officer country.
Well, for now, anyway. You might surprise yourself later. So, what do you think of the other personnel aboard?
Your pilot's good. He should shape up with a bit more training. I don't suppose you'd tell them all to get in the gym every day for some physical training?
Well, of course. Good idea.
That kid Toby's awfully young, but he's smart and hardworking. Can't always tell at that age.
I hope to get Toby back in school as soon as we can find a safe place.
Right now, Kai couldn't think of a safe place, but surely she could find something better than the very obvious target they were in.
Jim's coming along.
Thanks to you.
Typical young lout. All he needs is discipline and training. He's got the right instincts most times, though that stupid dog made me wonder. Not officer material, though. Aline's better suited to civilian work than military, but she might fool me in another 6 months. Cheryl, nice woman, but definitely not military.
And Rafe?
Rafe had to be part of her plans. Kai still wasn't sure what she felt about him, but for his connections alone, he was a valuable resource.
Rafe. Begging the captain's pardon, but I was not aware that he was actually on crew.
Rafe appeared with his usual instinct for the critical moment.
I'm doing the work.
As if to prove this, Rafe picked up Martin's empty cereal bowl and spoon and Kai's empty juice mug and went to the galley sink.
But I believe, Martin, you have other reasons for leaving me out of your fascinating analysis.
You were eavesdropping again.
I was not interrupting an obviously important conversation. In order to not interrupt but be aware when it might be polite to come in, I had to be within hearing. If you call that...
Eavesdropping. And I do.
I understand your loyalty is to ISC, not to Vada or the captain.
My core loyalties at the moment are highly tangled. I should be most loyal to ISC, yes, but it was our captain here who saved me from a situation in which honor would have required suicide. Thus, I have a certain point to my loyalty to the captain, which frankly has given me a bit of a headache.
I can imagine.
I doubt it.
Kai grinned to herself. Part of that headache had been literal. Rafe found out the hard way that she wasn't much like her cousin Stella when it came to advances. If the rest of the crew knew that she had dumped Rafe on his back for making a move on her, they were all pretending the incident hadn't happened.
There are other considerations.
The look he gave Kai had the force of a blow.
For the present, Martin, Rafe is part of the equation. We have determined that our interests run together, since both VADA and the ISC have been attacked, presumably by the same organization. Rafe, have you had any success digging into Osman's files?
The man has the best security I've ever seen outside of ISC research labs, and maybe better than that. I'm working on it. So far, I've managed not to let the database destroy itself as I sneak in, but that's about it. I have found some interesting references already forwarded to your desk, Captain. I'm not sure what they mean, but I thought you'd want to look at them.
But I've been shuffling numbers for 2 hours. I need some exercise before I work my brain anymore. I was planning to spend an hour or so in the gym.
Want to spar with me?
Martin stirred, but said nothing.
Fine. You probably have tricks I don't know.
Rafe's eyelids flickered. He knew, and she knew. She had surprised him once. She wouldn't surprise him again. Kai ran through some simple warm-ups and stretches, noticing that Rafe had his own set, not quite the same as hers. Then they spread one of the mat sets and took opposite sides.
Half speed.
Kai nodded. Her heart thudded. She had always liked hand-to-hand practice and found it hard to go less than full out, but she had not done this in too long. Rafe's loose-limbed crouch seemed too casual, but she knew it was not. She settled a little more. He had height and reach on her. He was moving, a smooth glide, deceptively slow. Kai shifted in time with his movement, meeting his strike with a hand placed to deflect, then strike on rebound. His foot slid out to hook her ankle. She had moved, forcing herself to the same slow rate. And for several minutes, they ran through a series of attacks and counters, all in slow motion. Kai realized quickly that he was a cunning fighter. His attacks were always multiple, coordinated. She could not react instinctively with the obvious, simple counter without putting herself in the path of the next attack. Her own attacks were complex, too, but she had not gone past combinations of three, and Rafe handled these easily. Rafe slipped one of her kicks past his hip.
Ooh, you're quite good. I think I have the edge technically, but you may be faster, and that would negate it.
The next kick caught him as he was moving back.
Suppose I don't need to be too ashamed that you got me last time.
Kai ducked and wove to avoid his next series.
Only ashamed that you tried it.
I still think you were lying to the mercs. You don't really think I'm that repulsive.
Repulsive? No. You're good looking in a certain style of looks.
Faint praise. Damn it, you're too smart. It usually works. Break, please.
Rafe backed away to one side of the mat. Kai moved to the other.
I need to talk to you, seriously. This takes too much concentration. Can we do something else?
Sparring was your idea. I'd just as soon try out one of these machines.
Good. It's about the internal...
Ansible, of course. Let me make it clear. I didn't want it, and now that I've got it, I don't intend to use it, or tell anyone about it. Is there any way to remove it?
Not that I know of. For your own safety, it's important that no one know you have it.
Well, they won't, unless you tell them.
But if someone finds out, they may try to get at it, or make it work. I was told it would be fatal.
They were back in her office, and she was about to open the cargo inventory list again.
Are you going to try a salvage claim? Or just go for a share of value?
It's a VADA ship. I'm claiming it as stolen property. I shouldn't need to go through the court at all.
You're not law enforcement. You don't have a right to just grab your own back.
I suppose it depends on which jurisdiction we land in. I wonder if Osman has a law library in his database anywhere.
Kai's implant queried the ship database, then dug deeper into the relevant sections. Salvage wasn't an option, not with witnesses to the fact that Fair Colleen hadn't been derelict or abandoned. Reclaiming stolen property? No, Rafe was right. Very few jurisdictions allowed that. In fact, the only legal standing she had was as privateer. And she still hadn't told Rafe she had that letter of marque. If she stayed on that course, she'd have to tell him eventually. But in the meantime, she had another person aboard she trusted more.
Excuse me, Rafe, I really must get this done.
He raised his brows at her, but left quietly. If she had been legitimate military, and Gordon Martin had been her senior NCO, she'd have known how lucky she was. Now she wondered if he'd be willing to stay with her once he found out. Martin looked at Kai with a faint but definite smile.
Privateer, huh? Well, I picked a good one this time.
I beg your pardon?
Martin shifted in his seat.
Ma'am, I did serve on a frontline vessel. We, knew unofficially, I guess you'd say, about the privateer program. Damned foolishness, I thought, most of the time. Though I'd like to have been assigned to one.
So you'll stay?
Until you throw me off, ma'am. It doesn't bother me. Privateers are official, just about. They do something that needs doing.
You do know that the government seems not to be happy with the Vada family at the moment.
That's politics, Captain. It'll shift back. It always does. Your family's got a good reputation. And I know you.
That took care of one problem, but she had a raft of others, legal and practical. Staying busy might keep her mind off those scenes the implant had made all too memorable. She wanted to go home. She wanted to go home now. Find the surviving members of her family. Find out why Slaughter Key had turned its back on them. She could not believe the government had caved in for Osman, of all people. In the dark hours between midnight and dawn, the presidential palace was dark except for the duty rooms, communications, security. The president, in his comfortable bed, had finally fallen asleep. His wife, suffering from a cold that turned her into a snoring buzzsaw, slept in the adjoining bedroom. Thick walls and doors muffled the annoying rasps and gurgles of her night breathing. He woke at the sound of a comm unit chime, his heart pounding.
Who would call at this hour? No call should have been passed through. My valet should have woken me.
His hand was scrabbling on the bedside console when he realized that it was his internal unit, his skull phone.
Look under your pillow.
Every hair on his body stood up. He was drenched in cold sweat. There could be nothing under his pillow. He always turned his pillows before he went to sleep. But he could not ignore that voice. He turned on the light and lifted his pillow. The data chip, hardly larger than his thumbnail, gave him no clue. It was there, in that place where it could not be, a tiny, shiny, terrifying presence. He had a chip reader in his room, of course, but he felt a great reluctance to use it.
What if this isn't really a data chip, but something else? Something explosive? What if it's toxic and has already poisoned me?
The sweat trickling down his sides stank. Surely he didn't smell that bad all the time. When he looked around the room, nothing else was out of place. He heard no sound he should not hear, but his heart was pounding so loudly that he could not be sure. He had to get hold of himself. He had to calm down and think. If he called in the security forces, they would wake up everyone, create a huge mess, and probably not find out anything useful. He knew who was behind this, whether it could be proven or not.
Grace Vada.
The old hag was crazy. She'd been in a mental hospital at one time, and they should never have let her out. He just had to find a way to neutralize her. Gracie Lane Vada smiled to herself as she watched sweat trickle down the president's face, his ribs, his back. His security should have detected the tap into their own surveillance system years ago, but they hadn't.
Now, will he put that chip in the reader or not? Will he call his security squad?
Grace had plans for each possibility, plans he would find as unsettling as the chip under his pillow. No doubt he would have plans, too, when he calmed down. She knew he was smart enough to suspect her, but she was confident that her plans were better than his plans. She'd had longer to work on them. A telltale lit on her workboard. With one eye on the screen showing the president, Gracie switched that channel to full recording and answered the call.
Found something.
Gracie ran the scan through her voice files, and her mouth quirked. Master Sergeant MacRobert, Slaughter Key Space Force Academy. She pondered the wisdom of using his name and startling him.
Identify, please.
Space Force Academy. I think you know who I am, and I'd rather not have my name used. I hear you're looking into the late unpleasantness in detail.
Yes.
That Ms. Narii kid who got your youngster in trouble.
Yes.
He had contact from someone who claimed to be a Vada. Ever hear of someone named Osman?
Osman Vada, yes.
Gracie remembered Osman all too well. She'd tried to convince the Vada higher-ups at the time to have him killed, but she was fresh out of the asylum, and that had led to threats of having her recommitted. If Osman was involved, that explained a lot. Osman had known about the bunkers under corporate headquarters, for instance.
He is a Vada?
Unfortunately, yes. A most unpleasant piece of work and long since kicked out, but a Vada. So Osman paid the student to get Kai in trouble?
What he said was that Osman was sympathetic to the Ms. Narii feelings about biomodification and suggested that Kai, as a Vada, would be more likely to help him get contact with a cleric so that he could tell his story.
What is he, stupid? The boy, I mean.
He's not the brightest cadet we've ever had, but not actually stupid. Inexperienced. Quite genuinely religious. The fervent kind. Osman also told him that Kai wouldn't get in trouble because she was a Vada.
So it wasn't malicious on the boy's part?
Not against Kai, at least. He was shocked when she disappeared. He claimed she was the only person at the academy who befriended him and was nice to him.
How did you find this out?
He didn't graduate. No matter what was said, Kai was a popular cadet and no one else was willing to put the time into this fellow she'd been tutoring. He was pretty much shunned. He committed suicide.
After telling you all this?
No, after writing it all down as a religious duty. Luckily, I got hold of it before Ms. Narii Chaplin did. I edited it a bit, but I made a copy. Thought you might want it.
What I want is some idea of why you're doing this. I suspect you're committing several breaches of regulations.
Space Force didn't do its job. Somebody got to somebody, and I want to know who and how. I think you're likely to find out.
We should meet.
No.
We need to talk longer and more openly than we can over any comm line, no matter how secure. Either you trust me or you don't.
Why should I trust you?
For the same reason I should trust you. We need each other. It would serve neither of us to harm the other. You care about Space Force.
And Slaughter Key.
Fine. And so do I. Vata and Slaughter Key both.
You're on a no-contact list.
So are you. Vata was told not to contact anyone at Space Force Academy. So what? We need to meet. Do you ever get leave?
In 17 days. Graduation's over. There's a clean-up period, then I get 10 days before the new class arrives.
What sport?
Sport?
Pick a sport. Something you do anyway.
Fishing. Up in the Samplin Hills. I usually run a cottage on one of the streams near Terra Lake.
Fine. Just do that. I prefer dry flies.
I'm a wet fly man myself.
Well, then. Until.
On Gracie's visual, the president got up, went to the bathroom, came back with a glass of water, fumbled in a drawer, and unpeeled an orange pill.
Now that's a mistake. You're going to be drowsy in the morning.
He had left the chip under his pillow. Another mistake. If the drug made him forget it, and his house staff found it... She grinned, imagining the furor when security got hold of it. She watched until he was clearly asleep, snoring, then played with the room's surveillance equipment, inserting a shadowy figure that moved to and from the president's bed from a closet. They'd find that on the daily review, and whoever was supposed to be monitoring the night shift would be in deep trouble. Then she reviewed the rental records of holiday cottages on likely fishing streams near Terra Lake and found that McRobert had booked through Murrian Holiday Rentals for the past 12 years. In their records, his first preference was Gray Falls, second was Overbrook, and the third was Greentop. All were on Middle Run. He had a current reservation for Gray Falls. The other two were also reserved already. The nearest available property was Brookings Manor, a working farm with sizable residence suitable for bed and breakfast accommodations. Includes fishing rights on Middle Run within walking distance. Available for seasonal or long-term lease or purchase. It wasn't a bad location at all, and it might serve displaced Vata family members as an interim residence headquarters. After some haggling with the larger property section of Murrian Real Estate, Grace arranged a year's lease in the name of Stavros's widow, who had, understandably, gone back to using her maiden name. A widow and her relatives retiring to a remote country estate would raise no eyebrows. Helen was presently living in one of the Stamarkos homes. That couldn't go on for too long anyway. It was so satisfying when one action solved more than one problem. Grace stretched and let herself drop into sleep for a short nap. The one good thing about being old was that she didn't mind not sleeping through the night. Kai Vata looked around the bridge of Fair Colleen shortly before they were due to drop back into normal space in the Garth Lindheimer system. Her crew had removed all the evidence of the pirates' occupation, except what had been locked away in case evidence was needed. The weeks in FTL flight had given them plenty of time to inventory cargo, purge and reinitialize the computers, and make her a healthy ship for a decent crew to ship on. With a new paint job, Fair Colleen could be the flagship of a new Vata fleet, proof that Vata Transport Limited was still a going concern. Or she could be a privateer, proof that Vata Transport Limited was a going concern with teeth. When they emerged into the Garth Lindheimer system, her ship's excellent scan showed nothing suspicious in the system, except that the system ansibles were not functioning. Without ansible function, they had no real-time communication with Garth Lindheimer traffic control, so Kai entered their ship's information in response to the automated beacon's request. The convoy, as expected, had emerged ahead of her ship, with the Mackenzie escorts positioned to guard either flank. She saw less traffic than expected and all but two local. Those carried normal beacon IDs. One had already jumped out by the time they received its signal. She hailed their escort.
When we dock, the other ships will owe me their percentage for safe transit. Under the circumstances, I could sign that over to you if you'd like. Or have you made separate arrangements with them?
No, Captain Vata. They still have a contract with you, not with us. It's a legal mess at the moment. Let's keep it simple. They pay you as they agreed. You pay us as we agreed. Then we part company.
I would be glad to supply a statement for your command if it would help.
I'm afraid it wouldn't. Any statement by you would be considered contaminated. We'll just take our scolding when we finally do get home.
Kaid had leisure during the long transit to realize just how foolish she'd been and how far the mercenaries had bent their rules to save her and her ship.
I'm sorry I've been such a problem to you. You were right. About the trap, about everything. I can't regret taking out Osman, but there must have been a less risky way to do it.
I hope you keep that in mind the next time you're in a tight spot.
I will. And I appreciate your standing by us and saving our skins.
Some skins are worth saving.
Kai stared at the blank screen a moment.
What was that about? My skin? Vata Transports?
Then she shook her head and called Stella on Gary Tobai.
How do you like being a ship captain?
I haven't done anything fatal so far. I think Quincy could run this ship herself, though I have been studying hard. But how are we going to dock without a pilot? I can't bring her in, and Quincy says she can't. She's not a licensed pilot, and anyway, she doesn't know how.
That was a problem Kai hadn't thought of. Legally, they should not approach within 2 kilometers of any facility without a licensed pilot aboard. Legally, every ship was supposed to have a licensed pilot aboard too, but most orbital stations had a pilot service for those whose pilots were incapacitated for some reason. Still, that could be expensive, and it was also a route by which strangers could intrude. She would prefer not to trust a pilot she didn't know. Kai glanced over at her own pilot. Lee, how do you feel about a suited transfer back to the Gary to bring her into dock?
I can, if that's the only way. Maybe we'll be lucky and the station will have a tug or pilot service.
They list one, but after that bonded security service guard tried to kill me, I'm not inclined to trust a commercial service.
Well, that's better than swimming. But you'd have to wait for me to come back out and bring you in, assuming you're sending the Gary in first.
I was planning to. With us out here armed to the teeth, she's less likely to run into trouble, I hope. Next, Kai talked to the other captains in the convoy, explaining that her contract with Mackenzie would end when they docked. She was creating a new account as soon as she could, and they could pay into that. The cargo on Fair Colleen was valuable enough to cover the fee if any of the convoy reneged on their payment. If anyone would buy suspect cargo off a former pirate ship, but of course they would. Osman had been making a living that way, and a good one, too. About a light minute from the main station, a warning message met them.
All ships on approach. All ships on approach. Identify yourselves on Channel 18. Report ship name, registry, ownership, organization, captain's name, number of crew. Do not depart from present course without authorization. You are targeted.
Friendly bunch.
Better than what we were told about Leonora. Kai entered the data for Fair Colleen as if that ship had never been anything but a Vada transport ship. Her name matched her beacon ship, at least. Registry, Slaughter Key. Ownership, Vada Enterprises. Organization, Vada Transport Limited. Captain, K. Vada. Crew of 6. Shortly, a message came back, voice only. Kai was not sure if it was a live person or computer-generated.
Ownership and captain do not match previous contact. This ship and captain of record are interdicted in this system. Explain.
Kai did not want to explain this over open airways. Request secure link.
Secure link available.
Status lights blinked, then steadied. Light lag plus a minute or two. The blurred image on screen steadied to show a severe-faced woman in a green uniform with blue facings. Two rows of silver buttons ran down the front.
Go ahead, Captain Vada. This is Port Security, and I'm Division Chief Ed Varen.
The person operating this ship was not a Vada employee. I understand you had issues with him. Kai waited, watching the communications chronometer readout. 59 seconds for the message to go, 59 for it to return, plus whatever time someone needed to frame a message.
Was he a Vada family member or using a false name?
By birth, he was a Vada, yes. He had been expelled from the family years ago. He stole this ship and represented himself as being part of Vada transport when he wasn't. Whatever he was doing, he did it for himself, not with any authorization from us. Again the wait. Kai tried to anticipate the next question, be ready to answer quickly.
And your relationship to Vada Transport's corporate structure?
That was another sticky bit. Kai had no way of knowing how far news of trouble with Vada had spread. My father was chief financial officer until his death.
We can't verify that with the Ansibles down.
You should have some records on Vada Transport. Are any of our ships there now?
No. A Vada ship departed some 10 days before the Ansibles went down. If you're really Vada, you should know what ships worked this route.
A moment. Kai queried her implant, and her father's data came up. Garth Lindheimer lay on a lucrative trading circuit. Vada had 2 ships constantly on the route. Connie R., captained by Casimir Vada, and Tregallet, captained by Benton Gallet. Unless something messed up their schedule, the ship that departed before the Ansibles went down should have been Connie R. Sometimes they do overtake each other.
That is correct. There is another Vata ship in this group, Gary Tabai. It is on our list with a K Vata as captain.
Yes, that was my ship. My cousin Stella's the captain now. She took over for me when I obtained this one.
That is an issue, Captain Vata. Precisely how did you obtain the ship you are commanding now?
Kai had been thinking how best to tell it. Osman Vata tried to trap me. He hated my father because my father and uncle were the ones who banished him from the family. Because the ship had a Vata transport beacon, I trusted him initially.
But you surely had been warned about him. Do you not use implants, you Vatas?
He was banished long ago. I suppose my father thought he was dead or far away and that I'd be unlikely to meet him. At any rate, I had no suspicion at first. We were traveling in convoy with a military escort, the Mackenzie Military Assistance Ships, and they advised me it might be a trap. I didn't agree and stayed behind when they went on with the convoy. It was a trap, and Osman attempted to board and kill us. He had allies, two pirate ships. We improvised a defense. I was able to send a call for help, and after some hours, after Osman was dead, Mackenzie was able to come back and take out the other ships before they closed with us.
So they did not witness what happened. You have no corroboration for your story?
They can corroborate that they found his being there suspicious, yes. That I left the convoy to check on him, yes. That I called for help, yes. That there were two ships that, when challenged, tried to fight, yes. Exactly what happened when he tried to board, no.
The usual delay, during which Kai wondered if any of the security recordings aboard Gary Tobai would help. With Gordon Martin, Rafe, and herself on this ship, she also wondered if Stella would be able to locate and duplicate them.
It seems likelier that you yourself were the bait in a trap set by your convoy. A small, apparently unarmed ship like Gary Tobai, but with military backup, captures a ship like the one you have now? Mackenzie isn't known for that kind of thing, but mercs have gone rogue before. Traders just don't have the skills or equipment to deal with a pirate, let alone a group of them. Mackenzie informs us that you have a letter of marque from Slaughterkey, and that you also have aboard an expert in ISC technology who has been repairing inoperable beacons. Frankly, Captain, we have no reason to believe that you are in fact a legitimate trader or commercial carrier.
Kai could not think what to say. She had anticipated having to make some argument to gain title of the ship, but she hadn't guessed that anyone might think she herself was a pirate.
I do have a letter of marque, but the fact is that Osman Vata, whom you yourself interdicted, attacked my ship and intended to kill me.
That will be for a court to decide. Your military escort confirms your story, but also confirms that you insisted on taking Osman's ship as a prize. Under these circumstances, and in the absence of communication with Vata Corporate Headquarters or the Slaughterkey government, and with no Slaughterkey diplomatic representative authorized to confirm or deny the validity of your letter of marque, we are unwilling to have you bring your ship in under your command. You will take up a station at least 25,000 kilometers from our orbital station under guard of our in-system security service and transfer to the station by shuttle. You yourself may appear before a court as specified in the Uniform Commercial Code, Section 82, Paragraph 32B, this court to be convened upon your arrival. This court will then determine the legality of your actions and the ownership of Fair Kaleen. Should you choose not to submit to this procedure, you are forbidden to approach nearer than 50,000 kilometers. On your present course, this intersection will occur in approximately 16 hours.
Kai looked around the bridge and met expressions as blank as she felt.
That's not what I expected. It could take days to straighten this out.
If you go in there, you'll end up in jail. If the civil court decides you were wrong to kill Osman and his crew, you'd be facing criminal charges in a system where you don't even have a diplomatic representation.
It's the only way to prove who I really am. I need to get this ship in my name legally.
It's the way to be stuck in a lockup with no chance at all to prove who you really are.
Martin gave Rafe a sidelong look, then nodded.
He's right, Captain. They want you to go alone. You don't know anyone here. You don't have any allies. You can't call on the Slaughter Key Embassy, even if there is one.
There's not. I checked. Representation is through Faella Consortium.
There you are. No allies, no backup. It's insane.
But if I don't go, they'll say I'm a pirate. And what will happen to Stella and the Gary?
Stella can take care of herself. And she'll have Mac and C to speak up for her, as well as the other captains. She didn't make the decisions you made. As your designated representative, she can receive the funds due you from the rest of the convoy and pay off Mac and C.
I've got to talk to Johansson again. And Stella. But I have to answer them first.
No, you don't. You've got hours. And by the way, partner, I really appreciate your not telling me about that letter of Mark. Were you ever going to?
Yes, when the time came.
The look Rafe gave her was not reassuring.
Well, the time came at someone else's convenience. I hope you don't have too many more surprises for me. I do my best plotting when I have all the facts.
No more that I know of. For what it's worth, I hadn't made up my mind to use the letter of Mark, since by the time it arrived in my hands, I knew the Slaughter Key government had turned against our family. If the Ansibles were up, I'm sure they'd have recalled it or repudiated it or whatever they do.
You weren't going to use it? What kind of idiocy is that? It's a marvelous opportunity to rebuild Vada's fleet, if nothing else. Not every system government is as hidebound as this one. As long as you don't prey on their people and spend enough in port, they won't care.
But if Slaughter Key...
Why do you care what they think? They turned on your family, right? Let them howl. You have a good fast ship and a letter of Mark. You'd be crazy not to use it to the hilt.
The others, Kai noted when she glanced around, were staring at Rafe as if he'd sprouted extra limbs. He looked around too, then back at her, a look as challenging as the flourish of a sword.
What? You haven't gotten squeamish, have you, or stricken with remorse or anything? After the way you killed Osmond?
No, I'm not stricken with remorse. Osmond needed killing, It's just
that you've always been a good girl, Stella says. Law-abiding, rule-following, all that. Well, look where it got your family. Dead, most of them. I'm not saying turn into a vindictive pirate like Osmond, but if you want to do the survivors any good, you can't be too worried about what other people think.
Kai was aware of a tense stillness. The bridge crew's attention was palpable. Her mouth was dry. She felt as if she were about to jump out of the ship into vacuum and freefall. A trickle of humor worked its way through. She had done that already, with a bungee cord. And she wasn't the nice, rule-bound girl she had been, if she ever had been. She had killed more than once, and she had enjoyed it. Something she hoped no one else would suspect.
Well, I suppose if communications come back and Slaughter Key tries to withdraw the letter of Mark, I'll deal with it.
A faint sense of relaxation.
All right. I'm not putting my head in anyone's noose just to see if they'll yank it tight. But I do need to talk to Stella and the Mac and C escort, and as many captains as I have time for.
No one said anything, but there was a collective gust of breath let out.
We're well stocked for any ordinary voyage. We can't air up the whole ship yet, but there's plenty for us, and we have the power to warm up environmental and let the tanks start producing. Plenty of water, right, Mitt?
Yes, plenty. We can go to electrolysis if you want, but it's safer to go slow.
Well then, we need to find a destination within two jumps, and in the books as being relaxed on regulatory operations.